Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Today on What's Next, we are going to talk about our children. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about a program that's going on inside Buffalo Public Schools. And with us to talk about it, Duncan Kirkwood, National Resilience Trainer, among other among other titles. Duncan, great to have you back.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And also with us, Katie Shuda. Katie is the principal at the Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management. Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, so we're talking about the Unleash Your Greatness program. Okay, this is going on in two schools, PS 59 and also at the School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management. Always interested to hear how these programs originate. Who wants to give the background into it for us?
I guess I'll start. Yeah. And like I had mentioned before, you know, we were kind of chatting, this is a program I had done for about 3 years. The vision came because when I joined the Army, we had to go through boot camp. And it's 9 weeks of like really difficult learning and training. But what happened is during that process, I learned to be a leader. I developed my resilience, my grit, because it was like every day you had to learn something new and work on it for hours until you were good at it. Then we learned the next thing and the next. And that process really helped mold me into a stronger person and a more resilient leader. Then I did the same kind of process when I joined my fraternity at Alabama State University. So when I came back to Buffalo, I just had this idea that like that type of process will be great for young people. And finally, after the pandemic, I decided I'm just going to do it. I'm going to put it together. So I put together this 3.5-day training at Beaver Hollow with 50 black young men from around Western New York. Independent Health was our sponsor, and it was incredible. We were running every morning, doing gratitude exercises, doing push-ups. Like, it was just this very intense leadership. Think of it like Tony Robbins meets Army boot camp, right? So it was kind of like that type of thing for 3.5 days. And the young men shined. And by the and we took their cell phones. And by the end, each of them were saying, can we stay another couple of days? It was like the greatest experience they had had, and me as well. So the next year, we did it again for 39 young black women, and we took them to Houghton University. And then the next year, we did it again with 50 young men at Villa Maria. And so this is really going to be the last year, because the fundraising piece of doing a program like that is just not something I get joy from. So in August, Dr. Ramona Reynolds with Buffalo Public Schools was talking to me about, you know, some of the challenges they were having. And I said, hey, you know, maybe I could be of help. So she kind of took that idea, talked with the superintendent, and she's coming back to me and said, well, submit a proposal and we'll consider it. Right. So I submit a proposal to do this year long program to really stretch out that 3.5 days I have been doing over the course of the school year to really build students and turn them from, you know, possibly troubled students who could go either way to leaders in their schools. And they came back to me and said, we're going to move it forward to the school board. And the school board approved it. And then we kicked it off in October. And so we did our kickoff. And then yesterday we did our first workshop with the young, with the students of both schools. And so in a couple of weeks, we'll do our next workshop with them. And it's just been a really beautiful experience. And if I'm being honest with you, really rewarding that Dr. Reynolds, the superintendent, the school board put enough trust in me, because, you know, I've been a parent advocate in the past. Right. So I haven't always been their person.
No,
right.
Exactly.
Right. So to see that my work and the value of what I bring to young people, because I really do this work a lot all around the country, that they see enough value in it to say, forget all that stuff before. Let's all work together for the betterment of students. It's been really validating to who I am as a person. So I've really enjoyed that as well.
Oh, okay, then, Katie, for your school and your student body, you represent them. What makes this program, do you think, work for your school?
Well, first, just starting with the title, Unleash Your Greatness. I think that every student does have greatness inside of them. And sometimes, as a Buffalo Public School, you know, we try to offer them everything. And sometimes we don't have all the answers or all the supports that we need. So a program like this can really just help and amplify the work that we're already doing. Our students have already said, so Duncan came in October, and we did a assembly with the 9th and 10th grade students. And the students already said, like, Miss, when do we get to do that again? you know, they're super excited. Duncan is motivating. He's someone that they can look up to. He looks like them. He's from Buffalo. He went to Buffalo Public Schools, and he's successful. And I think at the end of the day, it's a great role model for students, but it's engaging. I think a lot of times, you know, our students want to be engaged in what they're doing.
Right.
They don't want it to be boring. So when Duncan says at the end of this camp, he's going to offer a PS5, that is motivating for students, right? Something that they actually want and not like, you know. So I think I mentioned before that it's really hard to be intrinsically motivated. And this program offers them not only ways to be motivated, skills and assets that they're going to grow over the time, but there's also outside factors like a limo bus that's going to take them somewhere. Some experiences that kids have never had. And I think they get this in combination. So they get to have fun, but they also have to work hard. And I think that's really what our schools try to do, is we want to hold high expectations for them and also have fun. And with this program, it just kind of goes with what our mission is at our school.
You know, so much of, as you were speaking, was flashing in my mind. My first one is 9th and 10th grade programs at high school. So I have to go back many years to remember that. But remember the type of student I was, and I generally an unattached, you know, apathetic student to a certain extent. What did you see in your students as they were going through this program? Obviously this is new, but just getting a sense of what you saw that might have been a little bit different.
So yesterday they did vision boards, and it was really interesting. We were walking around the room, and some students, Duncan and I talked about this, some students knew right away what they wanted to do, how they wanted to be a better person. And then other kids kind of struggled, and because maybe they never thought about it before. So I think not only we're giving them opportunities to think about what they want, but also an example. So Duncan kind of told his story to the students, and not that they have to copy his story, but it's just an example, and maybe their parents never went to college. I know that my dad didn't go to college. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if your parents don't do something, your families don't do something, you sometimes don't know about it. It was really great. Kids were proud of it, because this morning I meet every kid when they're coming in. And I was like, I can't wait to see your vision board. Like, do you want to see it now? Or should I bring it up during lunch? So they're super excited about it. The kids, I never even told Duncan this, but after his assembly, the kids were like, can we join it too? How do you be part of that group? And so I had a couple kids that I added after the original thing, because they came up to me. And they were like, how do we get a permission slip? How do we get a folder? I had color-coded folders, right, with the permission slip, with the media release form, and with the survey they had to take at the beginning.
Okay.
And kids keep coming up and asking to be part of it. The cool part, too, is a lot of programs that we get in Buffalo Public Schools, there's criteria. This program had no criteria.
Okay.
So it wasn't like you had to have a certain average or certain behaviors. It was kind of, what kids do we think would benefit either working in a group of kids or getting a mentorship? So there was no criteria. And I sent Duncan some data on each kid. And you look, it's not really similar. It's kind of a mixture of kids. So I think that's really cool, too, is it's not a mold that we have to fit. It's kids that we think would benefit.
I'm interested in the vision boards. So explain what that's all about, and you know, why do you think that's an important part of this program?
Yeah, that's huge. And I really have to shout out a teacher friend of mine. She works in Montgomery, Alabama. His name's Crystal Arite. And one day we were talking, and I was talking about kids dreaming and having big goals in life, and they don't dream as much anymore. And should she explain to me is that a lot of young people who come from low-income communities, they don't have the luxury to dream because they're in survival mode. They're raising their younger brother or sister. They may or may not eat that day. They may have never met a parent. They may be in and out of foster care. They got to worry about gangs and drugs and violence. And that combination of stuff, and they're behind in their reading level, so school is extra hard and stressful, and there's violence in some schools, and so all of that, they haven't taken the time to sit around and just create a vision for their life. So once she had told me that, it was like, no, every kid I work with has got to do a vision board.
Okay.
Because it's so important, because if you don't know where you're going, then the current moment, this step doesn't have value. So like, if I'm a kid and I don't have a vision, I don't know, I don't care, my parents didn't go to college, I don't know, they're surviving barely, I'm surviving government assistance, this, that, then when I go to school, this doesn't have, I'm never going to use chemistry, I'm never going to use biology, I don't need to know Pythagorean theorem. Like, none of that has value to me. But if I sit down and draw a picture and say, I want to go to college, I want to leave Buffalo. Most of the kids in her school and their vision board said, leave Buffalo to go to college out of state. And I said, okay, well, if you want to go to college out of state, that means that that math class all of a sudden does have value. You can't be in there cursing out your teacher thinking you're going to get to an out-of-state college on scholarship.
Right.
So all of a sudden, as we create a vision, so the vision board had four quadrants. One was on education and academics. One was on personal growth, like how do they want to grow as a person. One was on their career, and one was on their health. And so they had to fill in each one. What is your vision for health in your life? Do you want to be healthy? Do you want to eat better? Do you want to sleep better? You know, what was your vision for personal growth? You want to be a nicer person? Do you want to have more friends? Do you want to whatever? What's your vision for career, and what's your vision for academics? And so some of them, like Principal Shooter said, struggled. And they're like, well, I don't know what I want to put for academics. And I said, okay, so let me backtrack a step. Here's how I opened up the vision board.
Okay.
I say, okay, listen, y'all. Yeah, some of y'all have never done vision boards. So here's how we think about it. I want you to raise your hand if you want to have multiple baby daddies. Nobody raised their hand. I said, raise your hand if you want to go to jail one day. Nobody raised their hand. I said, raise your hand if you want to be strung out on drugs. Right. And I kind of go on, three or four more very negative, obviously, things. Right. And so I say, okay, so y'all know what you don't want. You are very clear on what you don't want for your life. So now this vision board is going to be us getting clear on what we do want. And so by opening up like that, it kind of helped them. So, and then even after that, we still gave them some support. So they said, what do I do for academics? I say, well, do you want to get D's and C's or A's and B's? I said, I want to get A's and B's. I said, okay, right, you want to get A's and B's. For personal growth, I said, do you want to be a good person or a bad person? I want to be a good person. What does a good person look like? And they write what they think a good person looks like. For health, do you want to be unhealthy or do you want to be healthy? I want to be healthy. Okay, what does that look like? Right, and so we kind of did it. And it was, some of these vision boards were artistically beautiful, all of them were beautiful in a way of they are finally looking at their life and saying, this is what I want. And all of a sudden, if you know what you want, now you have a direction to move towards. That's why it's so important to create that vision.
Did you crush any of the kids when you said that you went out of state for school and you ended up coming back to Buffalo? Did that ruin anything?
So I told them that part in the assembly. Okay. that I went down south to HBCU to go to college. But, another thing that a lot of students in our schools don't know, and I'm learning this from both of the program, both schools, is they think college is more school. So they look at the college experience. And now college isn't for everybody. Some people are going to go military. Like I did military as well. Some people are going to go to college, trade school. Welders make a bunch of lectures. So I'm not like only talking about college. But I mean, for those who want to go to college or are interested, they look at college as more school. So they're not excited as they should be about going to college because college is awesome. Okay, yeah, it is a life-changing, life-altering experience. Right. It's more than just the academics and the classwork. But they don't know that. So when I talk to them about college, the ones who want to go, I'm excited talking about it. So they're getting excited that is making the current classes they go to have more value. I can't keep getting kicked out of class if I want to go to college where there are talent shows and road trips and toga parties and conferences in California, the school to send you. Like, if that's what college is, I got to get there. Well, I can't be fighting or vaping in the bathroom. You know what I mean? So we want to keep helping them understand that you want something, there are steps to get what you want. And this step is important as well.
And Katie, just switching back to you then, as you hear Duncan talk about this and this reinforcement of these positive images, what about that as a challenge as an educator in the city school district? Having to really deal with some of the realities that are out there with, like you said before, the potential of these kids and believing that, like you said, each has that potential to unleash their own greatness.
Absolutely. And I think that's what I love about my school is we have a great staff. that I think each kid in our school has one staff member that they can go to. And we try to really get to know the kids and find out that stuff. So when we meet with kids, I always ask, like, if they're struggling in school, like, what do you want to do after high school? Like, because if you don't know them and you don't know what, like, kind of what all this work that Duncan does, then you can't help support them get there. If there is no meaning, just like he said, then they don't see a reason behind it. Like, well, why do I have to take this class? And just all that same stuff. We do deal with that. But we have to give kids reasons and opportunities. So at our school, you may not be someone who loves English or loves math, but we have culinary. And what we find is that a lot of kids thrive in different areas. And so if you can be successful in one area and you can tap into that, then we can usually come up with a plan for a future. And just really getting to know kids and building relationships, I think, is the number one key. And I think that's what we do really well at our school. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question.
No, that's fine.
But one of the things that Duncan said that I wanted to talk about is when Duncan was talking, you in the assembly, you talked about studying abroad. And some kids were like, oh, my God, we can go to Italy in college. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that is something. And one of our former graduates, Ryan Dowell, her dad teaches at the school, too. She's actually preparing to go to Italy. And so we want to bring her back in and just be someone that the kids can look up to, too. She was right where you were. She was sitting in your seat. Duncan was sitting in your seat. And look at what they can do. And I think just providing those moments where they can see, like, just examples of real life people, not just like, oh, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to do this. Those real life examples and former students and former kids that were in their shoes.
Do you find it interesting when Duncan was talking about his original program when he took the kids out to Beaver Hollow, mm-hmm. push-ups, running, all this, and yet they seem to want more? And that's interesting to me. You know, again, I'm reflecting back on my experience in high school. I'm like, I got to go do what? But it's interesting to see how kids react in the situation. I'm kind of interested from your perspective, you know, how you see that and why it kind of works.
Kids love structure, number one. They love structure. They don't like chaos. Number two, they know when a person is real or not and when a person cares about them. And so when they know that they're going out here to do a program and someone cares about you and is taking the time out of their time to invest in them, kids know that. And I think that one of the things that I try to do as a principal is be a warm demander. And what that means is you're warm and you're loving and you care about them, but you also have high expectations. Mm. And kids really react well to that. I would say that if you talk to the people in my school, I think that we have good relationships with kids. And when you have good relationships with kids, you can tell them anything and they'll kind of go along with it, right?
Right.
Not anything in a bad way, but like, you know, if there's a consequence, they're like, okay, thank you, miss. They know that I'm doing what's best for them at that time. So I think when kids feel that, they want structure. They want to do things. They want to impress you. So I think that also comes with it.
Duncan, how about for you? I mean, reflect back to the 9th, 10th grader performing arts. If someone came up to you and said, we're going out to Java and we're going to be running and doing push-ups for 2 days, what would 14, 15-year-old Duncan Kirkwood have said?
Well, so I would not, first of all, I would not have wanted to go. I would have gone kicking and screaming.
Right.
And you'll take my cell phone. I would have been furious. And most of these kids were. These boys were angry. Their parents made them come. We took their phones as soon as they arrived. These young men were not happy. They weren't like signing up excited to go to this program.
Right.
But what happens is, number one, when you take phones and away from kids, they become kids again. Number two, when you put them in team activities, they form teams. Right. And when you push them, they rise to the occasion. So it may have sucked the first half a day. But after we did our vision boards and we went and played ultimate frisbee and they had to do all these push-ups because they couldn't stand in formation without talking or moving, they eventually learned that lesson. But then we went over how to tell your personal story and they got to open up and feel supported in a safe way and own their story instead of being ashamed of their story. Right. Then we had a mixed martial arts person come and teach them self-defense. Then we took them to the pool. Then we sat down taught them how to advocate for themselves, right? And we did a workshop on it. We had Say Yes come in, Daniel Robertson, and do a workshop on time management. And so we mixed all of this, and I would have loved that. I wouldn't have wanted to go,
right.
But once I got there, I had myself in mind. What would it have taken me to enjoy this time, to grow in this space. Because when I went to Army boot camp, that first 2 weeks sucked. They literally have a phrase in the Army called embrace the suck, because it sucks so bad. The only way to get through is to embrace that suck, right?
Right.
So, but after the first 2 weeks, it wasn't that terrible. You made friends. You had people who you held you accountable. You held people accountable. We had a battle buddy. We had these tasks and challenges. We had a standard, and we would help each other meet this standard, and it was unwavering. And so you just got used to that standard. Like that, you just rose to the occasion. And then, you know, in a boot camp, you start learning how to fire weapons. You learn how to give somebody an IV. You know, do obstacle courses. Like all of a sudden, these lessons start to be, you embrace it. It becomes fun. So, because I had that experience, I knew that they would, you know, I hoped that they would as well. And they did. You know, our young men, you know, really rose to the occasion, which is why I love doing the program. And when Dr. Reynolds said, hey, we want to bring that to our kids in our schools, I was like, heck yes, let's do it. And so I'm really happy to see it as it comes to fruition. And we've got support all over. A board member came yesterday, board from the North District, Cindy McEachin. She came yesterday on our next workshop. Board President Sharon Cotman's going to be there to give some words of encouragement to the students. And that means something. They felt good. Like I told them, we have a board member here. They all looked. They had this big, like, sparkly eyes. Like, oh my gosh, there's an elected official here. She's like taking selfies with them and going and giving them feedback on their vision boards. And it's like, we want to build them so they understand how great they are. Again, that's why I named the program Unleash Your Greatness, because we're starting with the premise that they have greatness. Like, that's the whole purpose. We know they're great. And I know it personally because I grew up in Buffalo. I grew up in Central Park over by Bennett High School, which is the hood, right? And we had gangs, drug dealers. You couldn't walk to the Amherst train station by yourself because you would get jumped. Like, I know what they're going through. But I also know the one kid down the street, if somebody would have believed in him, he could have went to college on scholarship. These other two kids, they went to play football. These other two kids, they did this. I made it to college. I'm a speaker and an author. Other kids would do acting and music. Brandon Williamson, he went to high school with me. He's a poet. He's like a professional poet and also a school administrator. So I know they have the greatness. We just got to get them to see it so that they can lean into it. And the sooner we can get them to see it, the further they can go, right? Because most people, what happens is, once they get out of high school, whether they graduate, go to GED, don't drop out, whatever, then life happens. You got to get a job. Then kids happen. Now you got to take care of kids. Now in your late 20s, 30, you know, early 30s, you're like, I got to get my life together.
Right.
There's no programs here to help us. Then they go in that victim mode. Oh, life isn't fair. There's no programs in Buffalo. This city, you know, doesn't have this, doesn't have that. When in actuality, there are tons of programs here. And so then they start looking for stuff, and that's when they start getting on that right track. If we could get them to have that epiphany when they're in high school, or like in school 59 in middle school, start to see themselves with greatness as doctors, as lawyers, as carpenters, as engineers, mechanics, cosmetologists. If we could start to get them to see that now, their potential of what they could accomplish would transform this city. And so that's really the vision for this. And Dr. Reynolds said, if it goes well, other schools in the district may want this to happen at their schools as well. And we would look to replicate it next year in 5-10, you know, schools as we continue to grow the program.
We're talking about Unleash Your Greatness, a pilot program going on in two schools here in the city of Buffalo. With us, we have Katie Shuda. She is the principal at Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management, and also Duncan Kirkwood, National Resilience Trainer, and the person who is putting this program together here in the city of Buffalo. We're going to take a time out, come back with more conversation here. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Celebrate the 50th anniversary season of Austin City Limits. Don't miss remarkable performances from Gary Clark Jr., Black Pumas, Brittany Howard, and more. Watch every Monday at 10 p.m. on WNED PBS.
Watch the best of Western New York high school football every Friday night at 7 p.m. Catch the games every week on Create on Spectrum Channel 1275.
Looking for an award-winning original series to binge? Buffalo Toronto Public Media has something for everyone. Check out Brave Spaces, Compact History, and Let's Go at WNED.org or on the BTPM YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And I hope you're enjoying our conversation today. We're talking about the Unleash Your Greatness program. It's going on in two schools here in the city of Buffalo, PS 59 and also at the Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management. With us, the man who's leading the charge here, the training for this, Duncan Kirkwood, and also with us, the principal at the Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management, Katie Shuda. When Duncan was talking, Katie, about taking the kids out to Beaver Hollow and taking away their cell phones and the reaction, you were nodding your head, nodding your head. I wonder if we could just have a little conversation right now about that, about cell phones in schools and how you have to integrate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So so it's funny, I was laughing because this school year we have been very strict on our cell phone policy. So students are only allowed to use them during breakfast and lunch in the cafeteria as per the Buffalo Public Schools Code of Conduct. Okay. And we are going hard. And we have a school-based management team meeting every month, and we have students on the team. And we asked for a student update. And I said, how is it going? And one of our seniors said, you know, Ms. Shuda, to the whole group, I am so glad that you took cell phones away, because I'm not going to lie, kids are participating more. I'm even participating more. I didn't realize how addicted I was to my cell phone. And it was unprompted, and we were all sitting there. We were like, oh my God, this is why we're doing it. I did a little research over the summer. I know that other school districts like Lackawanna said absolutely no cell phones and things like that. And I read the code of conduct in the Buffalo Public Schools, and I try to follow that exactly what they say. And it said only during lunch and breakfast. So I said, we have to come up with a system at our school. This is going to be very hard to track. It's like a full-time job in itself. And so we kind of did the system. The first time it's taken, we keep it till the end of the day. The second time, a parent or guardian picks it up. And the third time, they'd have to hand it in to the main office in the morning and get it at the end of the day. And we have an Excel spreadsheet. We're tracking it.
Okay.
And so it's going pretty well. But I explained to parents and Freshman Academy and in all my all calls and letters home that when students look at their cell phones, even if they say they're looking at a time, I could look at my cell phone right now, there's a notification.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting distracted. And I believe it was University of Boston did a study. And I think it said, and don't quote me, but when you look at a cell phone in class, it takes approximately 15 to 18 minutes to re-engage in the lesson. And that is, so that I read that this summer, and I'm like, that is just mind-blowing. So I use that when I'm talking to kids, and they really understand it. I said, so if that's, you look at your cell phone once, you're like missing half the class. And how can you be successful if you're looking at your cell phone? Now, cell phones are great for many things. Unfortunately, in school, sometimes it could be a safety concern if we're meeting up for an issue or if you're not paying attention to the teacher, you know, other things like that. So it does have its positives where we can communicate with students and families easier. We can do online test prep, different things like that. But really right now we need the cell phones to be out of the classroom.
Okay.
So when you said that, I know at first they kicked and screamed, but now it's like, it's kind of like something, one less thing they have to worry about during the day.
Right.
So I have mixed feelings on the cell phone thing because of the experiences I've had with different school leaders around the country. So for example, I've worked with the school in Friendship, New York, Friendship High School, and they have totally banned cell phones. Like their parents were down for it, their school board went with it, and they totally banned it. And they said every problem they had in the school is better. Like the grades are up, attendance is up, disruptions are down, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Everything you can measure has improved when they took the cell phones. But I have a different school, Cuba Rushford, that I went and presented to them last couple weeks ago. She said, we're integrating cell phones more into the school. And her logic is we're fighting the kids on the language that they speak. They use technology in a way we don't. Right. They use social media. They use apps. They use it every day, all day. And we're saying to make it easier for us and our generation, because we don't live in that world, we don't speak that language, we're going to take them away. That doesn't actually help them we need to teach them how to use it like we would do with a car or some other tool. So they integrate it more. So I have heard arguments on both sides. I have heard parents and students, you know, talk about it on both sides of the issue. I can say as a parent, each one of my kids is different, right? So my two oldest kids, they're not really into their stuff. My son, he's in a band. He loves his band stuff, plays video games. He's not into the social media stuff all like that, right? My oldest daughter, she's like typical teenage girl. She's, you know, on the phone a little bit, got dance, she's getting activities. You know, she's not like, you know, it's kind of like for her a trade-off versus watching TV. Like we used to watch TV all the time. She kind of looks at TikToks, right? That's her pastime. Sure. But she's not addicted.
Yeah.
But my youngest daughter, she is addicted. She is addicted. Like if we take the phone, there is like a kicking it. Like imagine like a child holding on for grasping for dear life being dragged away. That's like my youngest daughter, right? And she's very angry when we take her phone. But after 20 minutes with no phone, all of a sudden, hey, mom, can we watch a movie together? Mm. All of a sudden, hey, let's play a game. Who wants to play Battleship? Like, all of a sudden, she's a kid again. So as a parent, I'm having experiences on both ends. And I have a baby. So now me and my wife are trying to figure out how do we balance this screen time issue as we got this one-year-old because we got the Gracie's Corner on YouTube that everybody loves. Kids love it and all of this. We don't want them to start addicted right out the gate to this device,
right.
You know, so I can see kind of both sides.
Yeah,
of it.
And it's interesting to hear Duncan talk about his kids. So they all have a different approach to it. And this is something that obviously you see with your student body, kids who have different perspectives and trying to find that the best path in. That's got to be the constant challenge, I would think, for you and the rest of your staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Every student is different. We've had families of just families in our school that have had three kids that came through our school, and each one is totally different, even within families. So yeah, it is definitely difficult. One of the things that we're seeing, I know this is connected, is the rise of mental health concerns.
Right.
And so that is another thing. If you look, do any research on that, there are a lot of mental health concerns that are based on the phone, on Instagram, and all these things. So I think for us right now, if we can take that away for just a little bit and have them focus on their school, we think that's what's working for our kids. Mm-hmm. Now, there are students who may have medical notes where one of their coping skills is to listen to music or something like that. Then obviously we make accommodations for things like that because we want to make sure at the end of the day we're doing what's best for kids and each individual kid. So that does come up.
We also need, this is light anecdotal kind of thoughts, but we need an overhaul on, like, we need more regulation on the types of apps and how they work. So in other countries, all of the apps don't function the same. Like, so in some other countries, TikTok is only available until 8:00 at night.
Right.
Or the images on there aren't a free-for-all of any ridiculous thing. They're very curated. If you're under 18, that they're, you know, kids in recitals and stuff like that, but not stupid dances and stealing cars, right? And so I think at a higher level, we need to have some sort of version of regulation on how these apps can function and regulate what do they have access to as well. Because to your point, suicides among middle school and high school children have risen parallel to the accessibility of social media to middle school and high school children. So we've seen this rise in suicide, rise in depression among our students that is almost equally on par with the more technical the phones are getting and the more access that they have. So like when I go speak at different schools, the top two issues at every school around the whole country, of coast to coast, whether I was in Utah 5 days last week or here in New York, is student mental health and social media. Because the social media is a two-part problem. There's the mental health problem and the bullying problem. That's it. Every school, no matter what district I go to, those are the number two challenges, number one and number two challenges that schools face.
Yeah, I'm glad Katie brought up and you followed up there about mental health. Maybe that's another one of these topics that we can talk about and also kind of integrate it with the Unleash Your Greatness program as well. But the mental health issue, it's still... The numbers can be staggering of what I see of people who are impacted with mental health issues. And it seems to me that it's greater now than, say, when I was a young person. Whether that's the case or not, nobody has those stats from 50 years ago, right? But to that, though, what have you seen as an educator about kids dealing with it? And obviously, a big part of it has to be or had to have been the pandemic as well.
100%. every single day we are dealing with mental health concerns. I know that the district put social workers and guidance counselors and supports in. We just need more. I mean, it really is overwhelming. We are seeing self-harm. We are seeing suicidal ideation. We are seeing severe anxiety. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, we are dealing with those issues. We are working with families to try to find out what supports are best. I was on the phone yesterday, you know, with a parent. Like, we are trying to come up with plans because, like you said, each kid is different, and the issues that we're seeing are varying degrees, some very, very, very serious. And it is just something that we need. I know that there's programs out there. We have a partnership with Child and Family Services at our school with mental health counseling on Tuesdays. We have a social worker. We refer to outside agencies. We are trying our best, but I would say we could use all the support that we could get in that area.
Yeah. So later we can talk, because my wife is a psychotherapist. So she does families and stuff. So. Yeah. We might could get her in there to help. But anyway, I think student, really mental health across the board, not just with students, but in 100%. Adults, is like on this massive rise. Here's, I'm a resilience trainer. I am not a therapist. Okay. So this is me as a resilience person. People nowadays are less resilient. And people think that that just means if they fail a test or if they don't get something, that they feel bad. But resilience is more than just your ability to get over adversity. Resilience is also your ability to be present and be in a moment. Resilience is also about not connecting your value as a person to your life situation or your clothes or your, you know, a thing. Like, resilience is so much more. It's breaking out of thinking traps. It's responding versus reacting. Like, there's a whole gamut of skills that people need to develop that they just don't have anymore. And in older generations, there was more focus on doing things physically. So, for example, this is a perfect example. And I'll use your school. Right. So when I was in school, gym was our favorite class.
Right.
When we go, like, you might hate school, but when it's time to go to gym, it's dodgeball.
It's on.
You know, you climb the rope. You know, it's like a whole thing. Like, you don't want to leave. Everybody gets an A in gym because you love gym. Right. Nowadays, you know, kids, some of the kids, and I was talking to one of your gym teachers. He said they just want to sit on the side and just silently, they just gaze into the wilderness. They don't want to engage. They don't want to participate. He's got to design programs to get them to get up, walk, and move, because they don't just have that desire. So I think that there used to be this more movement, more doing things with your hands, the shop class, the home economics class. So there was like it something about physically using your body to do things calms that anxiety. And I think nowadays, because the phone is so prevalent, all you see is other people winning at life. You see them looking beautiful. You see their lives better. You see their opportunities, their travel, their car, everything about them. All you see all day is these images of people having things you don't have, looking a way you don't look. That is a barrage of pressure, of stress. And we used to have it too. We just didn't have social media. We used to have magazines. Remember, there was this whole big thing about beautiful women on the covers of magazines and how other people would feel like that's this unachievable standard of beauty. But how often were we reading magazines? You know what I mean? Like, you would get your Sports Illustrated. You know what I mean? It wasn't like as prevalent. You know, on TV, the actors and actresses, and when we watch shows, they were normal looking people. Like, they were good looking people, but they were normal looking people. Whereas now everybody is the most beautiful, curated, makeup, you know, fitness warrior person. So on TV and then in your phone nonstop, everywhere you go, every billboard, everything is showing you something you're not. That affects people. And that's not just children. So that social media is a big piece. So part of our program, just to bring it back to the program, we're going to make them know that they're amazing. We're going to make sure that they know that they're beautiful, that they're talented. We're going to speak life into these students. I had one of your young men. He is like a busybody, right? But when we did the vision boards, for 12 straight minutes, he sat and worked on it silently by himself, away from his friends, right? He was doing a good job. So I pulled him to the side and I told him, I said, listen to me. I whispered. I didn't want to, you know, not in front of people. I said, listen, you are not like the other kids that you hang out with. And I want you to stop acting like it. you have greatness. You're smart. His vision board had like angles. It wasn't like just squares. It was like triangles that were turned different sizes. I said, you have greatness in you. And I want you to lean into that. We're going to put you in leadership positions. We're going to make you speak in front of people this program because you got it. And I'm not going to let you just go down that road of regular hood Buffalo stuff. Right? Because that's what he wants to do. That's what's cool. That's what's fun. That's what I said, but you're not like that. You're different. And instantly, for the rest of the time, he was a different, like, it was like he became a different person for the next 20 minutes when I put that, like, that onus of greatness on him and spoke that into him. And so we got to be consistent because kids don't like it when you're not consistent, right? So we got to continue to do that type of work with the kids so that they all are in their own way, give them what they each need individually or what they need to hear, build them up so they have that confidence, you know?
We're talking about the Unleash Your Greatness program in Buffalo schools. There's two pilot programs right now, one at PS 59, the other at Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management. Their principal is with us, Katie Shuda, and also Duncan Kirkwood, National Resilience Trainer, and who's bringing this program into Buffalo schools. We're going to take one more time out and come back and finish up with What's Next. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Looking for something to do? Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always hosting fun and insightful events. We have concerts, big ones and small ones, educational events, and events that help raise money so we can continue to serve our community. Visit WNED.org/events to see what we're up to.
Did you know that Buffalo Toronto Public Media produces shows that earn New York Emmy nominations and awards, Webby Awards, Telly Awards, GLAAD nominations, and New York State Broadcaster Association Awards? Check out our award-winning productions like Compact Science, Compact History, Let's Go, Brave Spaces, Klein Hands Gift to Buffalo, and much more on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel or visit WNED.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next? Unleash Your Greatness. It's the name of a pilot program in Buffalo schools at the Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management, also at PS 59. With us, Duncan Kirkwood and Katie Shuda, who's the principal at the Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management. And I appreciate both of you leading us into a discussion about mental health. And with that, just a reminder that there is always help available. The suicide prevention line can be reached at 988. Let's get back to the program here when it comes to Unleash Your Greatness. I really enjoyed what you were saying there, Duncan, about the one student who you picked out as a busybody. And you brought him in and you put him on his vision board. And it kind of almost changed his, you know, it sounds like there was a huge change right in front of you. Is it peer pressure, do you think, for a kid like that? What do you think?
I think it's a combination.
Yeah.
So number one, I don't know where you grew up. Okay, I grew up in the hood in Buffalo, and doing hood stuff is fun.
Okay.
Okay, so just so y'all
What's
know.
What's the most fun?
So when one of the things me and my friends used to, we would climb on the rooftops of different garages in my neighborhood, and you know, at different seasons, the acorns would fall off the tree. So we'd go up to Manhattan Park with like a garbage bag and fill it up full of acorns and throw them at cars riding by.
It sounds so much familiar to things that went on in my neighborhood. Those were apples, though.
Okay. Yeah. So that was our activity for the day. You know what I mean? Like we'd be excited. Like we were like, okay, this is what we're gonna do today, okay. Right? But like doing like things that are usually can get you in trouble are fun. And I'm gonna be really candid. When I went to performing arts, I was the kid. Me, it was a guy named Andrew, Reggie, Clay. Like we would do things that would get us in trouble, but that were fun. We'd sneak our PlayStation into school and play video games during the day. We'd skip class, like you know, those things are.
Is it okay if your kids hear this program? It'll continue.
No, sure. They don't listen. Okay. I'm safe.
All right,
I'm safe.
Very good.
All right. But those things are fun, and so that's part one. The allure of the things that are wrong usually are fun. Number two, media, marketing, branding, it teaches black kids, and again, maybe this is the same for Hispanic kids, but I can only speak from my experience, but it teaches a lot of black kids that being smart answering questions in class, showing up to class early, doing your homework, asking for help. All of those are things that Black people don't do. Like, that, you're like a loser if you do that. You're lame. You're a teacher's pet. You're acting white, right, when you speak correctly, right? So they shy away because there's like this weird cultural thing for Black teens where it's where they feel like doing the right thing makes you a square, a loser. Like doing, you know, working hard in school, trying to get your education, like, oh, you're not the fun person. We don't want to be around you. So there's that pressure. And then now there's also social media where they've got boys stealing cars, showing you how to steal cars on TikTok, then getting in the cars and driving them crazy and swerving in and out of traffic on purpose on the highway. So kids see that and that looks fun. And because their brains haven't developed yet and they don't have, in a lot of cases, a secure structure around them, or sometimes they even do, but they're influenced enough that they go do it. They'll go steal a car and drive on our 33 and then flip the car over. You know what I'm saying? Because absolutely. So we got all of these pressures on them and they don't really see a cool, fun person that's doing the right thing or that looks like them and it is doing well, right? If you're a hood Black kid, who do you know that's got, that's making money? The drug dealers. You don't know an accountant or a lawyer that's making $180,000 a year. You don't know that person because they don't live on your street no more. They're not hanging out with you. They're not seeing you at the corner store. The person you see with the gold chains and the expensive watch, the nice car, that's a drug dealer. So that's another influence, you know, on you. And so we've got to, I'm trying to, in this program, combat all of that, right? That's a lot to fight in a program. But I've got Cassina Frazier. She works at Doonville. With access, and she has a program called Access Granted. I hope I pronounced that correctly. My wife gets on me about that. But and so we are doing everything we can. So like one of the things that we're going to try to do to combat all of that is to turn the kids into leaders, where not only will they be doing the right thing, it's going to be cool because they will be so celebrated for doing the right thing. So we're going to do an advocacy day in January. We're going to teach them Martin Luther King's 6 steps of nonviolent direct action. They're going to pick a problem in their life as a class, as a group. So whether that's a problem at school, a problem in the community, they're going to find a problem. And we are going to do something. So maybe that's change the name of a street or get a street paved or get 5 more minutes in their lunch period or whatever, provided, you know, we'll see. But we will, we're going to get them to pick a problem and I'm going to teach them how to fix it. So they will not live their lives as victims. They will understand that if there is a problem, there's a process for how I can advocate for myself. So they'll have to go get signatures from their classmates or their neighbors or their community and present it at the council meeting or the school board meeting or whatever. And they will turn into leaders because they will take the onus that I can change things in my life. I don't have to just go along with things. So that's one of the things that we're going to also do in the program as well.
You know, Katie, I hear the dynamic that Duncan's describing there, and I can imagine what it, how it, you know, shows itself in everyday life at the School of Culinary Arts. I guess it reflects to me that it seems to me an educator in your situation has to kind of always be looking for new approaches to education, to helping kids get through some perilous times.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what they say is if you keep doing the same thing over and over, it's called and you don't get different results, it's insanity.
Right. Right.
And I think before we started the show, we were talking about it. We kind of at Buffalo Culinary this year had a reset. I was out last year. My daughter's also one. I have a one-year-old. You said you had a one-year-old mm-hmm. too.
Is she on social media yet?
No. Okay. No. Then my dad passed away, so I was out. And so we really had to have a restart. After COVID, definitely coming back was so difficult. We had to change the way that school looked. We had to change the way that we interacted with families. We interacted with students. How teachers taught. I mean, everything changed. And now we're slowly getting back into it. This is probably like the first year where we're like, okay, this feels a little more normal than it was after COVID. So if you're not changing, you're not trying to do things different, then you're going to get the same results. When you were talking about how pulling that kid, it just, my brain went immediately to what we're doing this school year. We had teachers nominate students for an incentive banquet. We're a culinary school. We have a banquet room. And I told the teachers, you know, I don't want the students that have 100 averages who are have 100% attendance. They're going to get their data-based incentive in another month. We want the students who are maybe trying or improving. And the kids were so excited, like, who nominated me? Like, cool kids who were on the football team who live where you're talking about. They were so excited. They were trying to figure out who nominated them. They're like, is it because I'm doing my work and I'm going to class on time? Like, it was so awesome to see. And that's one of the things that we changed this year. We have to keep changing. We have to keep trying to motivate kids. We have to keep trying to offer them different things. We want school to be a place where they feel safe, supported. I always tell everyone my only two goals are make sure kids are safe and successful. And we have a whatever it takes attitude.
Can I just add on to that? I have, for the majority of my life, always believed that other parents from low-income areas parented like my parents, which is, I didn't get a great education, but I want you to be better. That's how my dad, you know, he didn't go to college, you know, he graduated McKinley, you know, started working up with it, you know, doing machine tool, you know, type thing. And he always said to me, you are going to get an education, because he knew school education was the way to like a better life, right? So I just assumed other families had that same mindset. Like, hey, I didn't get a great education, or I'm not successful, but you or my child, you will be. And over this last year, I want to be very honest that I have learned that is not every parent's outlook. There are some parents who undermine their child's success, that are smoking drugs with their children, that are vaping with their children, that are telling them they don't need to do the work, that school doesn't matter, that tell them they don't want them to go to. I didn't know that that was a real. I would have argued you down to know that that's a reality. But for some of our students, unfortunately, that's real. So to hear a program like yours, where a child can be celebrated for trying to do the right thing, that might be the only time in their life they've been celebrated for doing the right thing, for getting a B, for showing up 5 days in a row to class. Your school or that teacher or you or whoever your administrator is, that might be the only person that's ever said to them, good job, I'm proud of you. And so it is so important to positively reinforce. You know, when I joined the Army as an officer, they said it's one thing you need to know as an officer. Praise is free. And titles are free. So give them out as much as you can, right? Because when you give someone praise, you give them a title, they feel empowered, but it costs you nothing. And so that was a lesson I've learned. And so just to hear that you guys are doing that. I did some training. I don't want to talk about another school, but I did some training at Maritime Charter School, and I talked with their school leader. And because of our talk, they changed their format. So now every morning they do like battalion. They put their students in like groups. They do a morning formation type thing. And it has changed everything. So now the kids are getting awards. They're getting recognized in front of their peers. It's like this thing. So now the kids want awards, and the groups want, as group cohorts, they want awards as a group. And so all of a sudden their school culture has been changed. So this year Business First rated them as the number one charter school of the year, in the city. And so the point I'm saying is,
right,
praise, awards, affirmation, it doesn't cost us anything to speak that life into students. And so to hear that you guys are doing that is amazing. And I really hope you keep that up, you know. And we can just double down. Because there are another thing people don't understand, and this is for you, community members want to support good things. See, a lot of people think like you're an educator, you're in the school, you got to do it by yourself. You know, you got Buffalo BPS supporting you, but you got a whole community. If you said on this show, hey, we want to give 7 kids tickets for 2 to Russell's, right? Somebody will call the show or reach out to you and say, I'll sponsor that. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so we have to do a better job of saying to the world, we want your support. We want help. We're doing good things because people want to help. You know what I mean? So, and it sounds
We want your help. So whoever's out there.
So, and then, you know, we're down to our last 2 minutes here. So I want to give each of you a minute to do this. We're going to start with you, Katie. Just tell our listeners about the kids at your school.
Well, I don't want to brag, but I have the best students in the Buffalo Public Schools. We have students in grades 9 through 12, a very diverse population. We have more girls than boys. So I don't know if that program, but our students come from all over the city. They come with a lot of different experiences, and they come to school and every parent that sends their kids to school wants the best for their kid. Mm-hmm. And so at Buffalo Culinary, we try to provide them with that. We have a lot of fun, exciting things coming up, but we want students to be successful. And we have a very, very diverse special ed population as well. We have about a 33% special ed population. And we also share a building with Occupational Training Center, which is 100% special ed, students 18 to 21, students with disabilities. So our students are just the best. Nice. You can come visit anytime. We'll treat you to lunch.
Nice.
Walk over.
That's right. A great place to get lunch.
Yeah.
Duncan, we're only going to give you 30 seconds. Tell me about Buffalo Kids.
Our kids are incredible. And here's one thing that I think people don't realize about Buffalo Kids. Because it's harder to grow up in Buffalo, because there's so many challenges and so many obstacles, our kids actually have more potential than kids who grow up in places where it's easy. So if you can make it in Buffalo, if you can find a way to navigate Buffalo and do well in this community, somehow, whatever that looks like for you and your family, as you go into the world and other places, you're able to compete at the highest level.
Spoken like a resilience trainer. Duncan Kirkwood and Katie Shuda, thanks very much for joining us on What's Next.
Thank you for having us.
This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.